60 beautiful degrees in Midtown Atlanta on this wonderful Wednesday. Welcome, friends. Mark Arum and crew. Gonna bend your ears for the next 3 hours. We got a ton of stuff to talk about. First and foremost, 30 minutes from right now, we're going to go live to Kyiv, Ukraine. Reporter Joe Lindsley has been there, Deborah, since the war broke out. The only American reporter that has been in Kyiv reporting on the war since it started. So very excited to talk to him in about 30 minutes and get the reaction to Ukrainians about the aid package that was passed in the Senate yesterday and President Biden will sign into law today. Part of that aid package, though, is that TikTok ban. And man, have you talked to the Gen Zers? They are
in arms about this TikTok ban.
The reaction is fierce from a lot of the younger folks out there. Stephen Dennis, he's the congressional reporter from Bloomberg News. He's going to join us in the 11 o'clock hour and talk about what the ban actually is. I am good at predicting things historically, and I don't think that you'll ever have to delete TikTok off your phone. It's going to be banned, but I think ByteDance is going to sell it. Yeah. So just all the kids, calm down, relax. The millennial that walks the halls and doesn't say anything to anybody, he's fired up. I think TikTok.
He is?
I don't know. I'm just assuming.
I'd say like Vinny, the Gen Zers.
I think that TikTok will never go away. It'll just be sold off by ByteDance because they're not going to just let a $1 billion profit center go away. They're going to sell it. So to everyone, just calm down. There is a ban coming, but I don't think we're going to get to that. And our buddy Peter King, you know, I love to travel. And good news for travelers, the new airline fee rules, meaning if something goes wrong in your trip, you will get refunded automatically. You don't have to request it. So Peter King's going to join us live. No Trump trial today. They're back in court tomorrow, but yesterday was a big day. I want to just do a quick recap of what happened yesterday. AP correspondent Julie Walker reports a tabloid publisher says he pledged to be Trump's campaign eyes and ears during the 2016 race.
Testifying in Donald Trump's hush money trial, the former publisher of the National Enquirer, David Pecker, told jurors that Trump's lawyer and fixer, Michael Cohen, would call him and say, "We would like for you to run a negative article on a certain political opponent." Pecker said he would send me information about Ted Cruz or about Ben Carson or Marco Rubio, such as bungling surgeon Ben Carson left sponge in patient's brain. Pecker said he would send Cohen drafts of these stories to which Cohen would provide feedback. Asked if he knew whether Cohen ever shared these stories with Trump, Pecker said, "I don't recollect that. No." Trump pled not guilty to charges of falsifying business records to cover up salacious sex stories about him during the 2016 campaign. At court in Manhattan, I'm Julie Walker.
Now, I don't know if any of that is illegal, right? I don't know if the former president's going to get convicted on this. I don't know. I don't know what the end result was. But just from a human standpoint, if you were a Ted Cruz supporter in 2016 or a Marco Rubio supporter, I thought Rubio was going to run the table, or a Ben Carson supporter, you've got to be furious. Because basically what we found out in court yesterday from David Peck, I'm not going to say his name anymore. Oh, okay. David Peck. So I'm going to bleep it now because we had too much fun with it yesterday. So the publisher of the National Enquirer, David Peck, basically said that Michael Cohen would come to the offices, or he would text David Pet and say, "Hey, listen, we want good stories for us, the Trump campaign, and bad stories for our opponents." And David actually said we would just make up stuff. They would give us a nugget and we would embellish, knowingly publishing false stories. And one that sticks out to me was the Ted Cruz story. Do you remember this Ted Cruz story that popped? Now, you might remember Ted Cruz won the Iowa caucus. You know, Donald Trump didn't win the Iowa caucus. Ted Cruz was the front runner. And then the National Enquirer runs a story that says that Ted Cruz's dad was involved in the assassination of JFK. Do you remember that?
I don't remember that.
I was like, what the? So this was Ted Cruz's reaction when the National Enquirer broke that story on behalf of the Trump campaign.
"Donald Trump alleges that my dad was involved in assassinating JFK. Now, let's be clear. this is nuts. This is not a reasonable position. This is just kooky.
So that actually happened. And here's then-candidate Trump talking about the allegations that Ted Cruz's dad was in on the assassination of JFK.
His father was with Lee Harvey Oswald prior to Oswald's being, shot. I mean, the whole thing is ridiculous. What is this, right prior to his being shot? And nobody even brings it up. I mean, they don't even talk about that. That was reported, and nobody talks about it. But I think it's horrible.
There was also a story that said that Ted Cruz had five lovers. The Ben Carson story, Surgeon Ben Carson, the National Enquirer published a piece saying that he left a sponge inside someone's brain. Like, blatantly made up stories. Now, again, I don't know what the legal ramifications are, or if the former president's going to be found guilty. I'm not here to judge or argue that. But just as someone with any sense of morals, that's dirty water, man. That if you are a Ted Cruz supporter, gosh, Ted Cruz has got to be so mad right now. Because now it's out there that the Trump campaign, in coordination with the National Enquirer and their publisher, David Pet, just made up lies about the candidates to hurt them. Never mind hush money payments or Stormy Daniels or the Playboy. I mean, that's just again, I don't know if that's wrong legally, but morally, that's crazy.
There's some standards of journalism, right? Well, I mean, it's the Enquirer.
Yeah,
I know we all kind of look at it and kind of laugh,
yeah.
Right? We never really think, ooh, this is where I'm going to get my hard-hitting news.
But some people do. And the fact that the Enquirer published it, I'm going to play the audio from Trump again after the Cruz thing. Listen to what he says.
His father was with Lee Harvey Oswald prior to Oswald's being shot. I mean, the whole thing is ridiculous. What is this, right prior to his being shot? And nobody even brings it up. I mean, they don't even talk about that. That was reported, and nobody talks about it. But I think
he doesn't say that was reported in the National Enquirer. He just says it's out there. It's been reported. So I don't know if it's wrong in a legal sense, but that's wrong in a moral sense. And I'd feel the same way if the Clinton campaign was getting aided by the National Enquirer or the Obama campaign, right? The National Enquirer used to post stories of Hillary Clinton when Trump was running versus Clinton in the election. They'd be like, Hillary Clinton has 6 months to live. She has a brain tumor. Like, dude, it's just dirty water. It's just so anyway, that's what happened in the Trump trial yesterday. Not getting a ruling yet on the gag order. President Trump was, I heard it was reported that he was violating the gag order again yesterday. So I don't know, but no trial today. So we can all take a day off from the Trump news. But gosh, Ted Cruz has got to be seething right now. Finally knowing that it was the Trump campaign that was filtering these bogus stories about him to the National Enquirer. All right, more important stuff, though. The foreign aid bill has passed. What does it all mean? We'll break it down for you next on the Mark Arum Show.
This bill is one of the most consequential measures Congress has passed in years to protect America's security and the future, the very future of Western democracy.
Senator Chuck Schumer on the floor of the Senate yesterday after overwhelmingly passed all the foreign aid bills. Ukraine, Israel, Taiwan, and the TikTok ban. I guess yesterday it would be 80 to 20, the vote in the Senate. It was 79 to 18. So apparently some Zeeks didn't vote. But I was really close. 79 to 18. Bernie Sanders, the independent Bernie Sanders, but he usually votes with the Democrats. He voted no on it because of the Israeli aid. Updating that and what it means. Ed Donahue has the developments on the aid bill to Ukraine and what it means long term.
A $95 billion aid package is moving ahead in the Senate that includes billions for Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan. The bill has been slowed down by Republican opposition in the House. In the Senate, Washington Democrat Patty Murray says the U.S. is on the clock.
There is no reason, no excuse for delay, not when bombs are falling on our allies, not when civilians, including kids, are suffering and starving, not when the world is watching to see if America is still united enough to lead.
In Ukraine, desperate troops are rationing or running out of ammunition on the front lines. Minority Leader Mitch McConnell says delay has strained the prospects of defeating Russian aggression.
Dithering and hesitation have compounded the challenges we face.
McConnell has made clear stopping Vladimir Putin is important enough for him to stake his political capital. Ed Donahue, Washington.
Yeah, so it is now going to go to President Biden's desk. He, of course, will sign it, and the foreign aid will get to Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan. Here's more from Mitch McConnell, who, since he's announced that he's stepping down as speaker, is becoming a little more vocal. He's not really pulling punches anymore.
Even as Moscow, Beijing, and Tehran grew more convinced that our influence had run its course, and even as loud voices here at home insisted on abandoning the responsibilities of leadership, America stepped up and the Senate held firm.
And again, we're going to go live to Ukraine after the news at 9:30. Reporter Joe Lindsley's there in Kyiv. He has been there since the start of the war. The only American radio reporter, a reporter in general, that's been there every day for the Russia-Ukraine war. So I want to get reaction from him, from the Ukrainians, what they think about the aid package finally being passed in Congress and what it means to the war effort going forward. All right. So what does what comes next now militarily in the Russia-Ukraine war? AP correspondent Charles de Ledesma reports Ukraine is getting a big boost of U.S. aid.
A new big package of U.S. military aid will help Ukraine avoid defeat in its war with Russia. Winning will still be a long slog, though. The arms and ammunition in the $61 billion military aid package should enable Ukraine to slow the Russian army's bloody advances, and it will buy Ukraine time for long-term planning about how to take back the fifth of the country now under Russian control. Michael Clark, visiting professor in war studies at King's College London, says ultimately it offers Ukraine the prospect of staying in the war this year. Sometimes in warfare, you've just got to avoid being rolled over. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
I don't know what this is going to mean long term to the Russia-Ukraine war, what the eventual outcome is going to be. But this aid package does keep Ukraine in the game. It allows them to keep fighting and try to get back the lands that Russia has annexed and taken over during the war. And I understand a lot of you listening are saying we shouldn't be, you know, paying Ukraine. And I understand your concerns. There's concerns about oversight of the money. Where is the money going to go? Now, from what we've been hearing through the reporting is most of this money, the $60 billion or so, is basically giving them our older military equipment and arsenal, and we will replenish our stockpile with that $60 billion. There's not going to be a huge slush fund for Vladimir Zelensky to just have. There's not $20 billion that he can just say, oh, I want new carpeting, or, you know. And in that bill, which I thought was interesting, there's $26 million of oversight. So in this package, we're going to spend $26 million to make sure that every penny is going where it should be. And I look at it like this. It's so hard to comprehend war, right? If you're just driving around 285 right now, you're going to your job, you're dropping the kids off. It's tough for us to picture what it's like in a war. And how can we relate to that? Aside from the veterans out there that are listening that have served, we really don't have that experience of wartime. But Ukraine is an ally, right? Ukraine is a democratic ally, not only to us, but, all the democratic nations in Europe and Asia. And they're getting bullied by the big kid on the block, which is Russia. So as an ally, a synonym for friend, right? If your friend was in desperate need of saving their home, for example, like not your closest friend, but your friend. Like, Deborah, I'm not your best friend. I'm not a close friend, but I'm an acquaintance. And if I said, Deborah, they're about to foreclose on my house, can you give me a little something? You would give me some money to save my home.
Sure, absolutely. We'd get a Kickstarter and try to get everybody involved.
Longori would cut me a little something-something. Judd would write me a big check. Judd loves me. So it's kind of like, I know that's a simplification, overly simplified, but basically, you know, our ally, it needs help saving their home. And we kicked in some money, which is way better than this thing escalating and we have to send our troops over there. It'd be way better for me to ask Deborah for, you know, a couple bucks to save my home than, Deborah, please come over and replace my roof for me.
Yeah, that's not going to be.
Yeah, exactly. So I know that's a way oversimplification, but I support the funding for Ukraine. I support the funding for Israel. I don't know enough about the Taiwan situation to comment on that, but if they think it's important to keep China at bay to give military funding to Taiwan, then so be it. But I am glad that this Ukraine package, because if no one stops Putin now, no one's going to stop him eventually. And in order to stop him eventually, it will take U.S. troops on the ground. And no one wants that. So hopefully Ukraine can beat back the Russian forces. And hopefully, again, I don't know what's going to happen at the end of the war. If Ukraine will prevail, if Russia will prevail, or if they're going to come to some sort of peace agreement. But, you know, the westward movement of Putin has to stop before it gets to Poland or some of our NATO allies. Then this thing becomes World War III for real. And again, it's Russia, China, Iran, and North Korea. Do you really want to side with that foursome? You want to go golfing with that foursome? No. I want to go golfing with America and England and Germany and Italy, Greece. Now I'm just naming vacation destinations. All right, speaking of Ukraine, as I said before, we're going to go live to Ukraine. Reporter Joel Lindsley is going to join us live from Kyiv with Ukrainian reaction to the aid package and an update on what's going on in the war with Russia and what's it like to live in Kyiv during wartime. I mentioned not many of us have that experience, so we'll pick his brain. Very excited. Reporter Joel Lindsley will join us live from Ukraine after the news. Social media active throughout the broadcast, friends, at Mark Arum, M-A-R-K-A-R-U-M.
Tonight, we make Vladimir Putin regret the day he questioned American resolve.
Senator Chuck Schumer yesterday, as the Senate passes the massive foreign aid bill, aid to Ukraine, Israel, Taiwan, and its neighbors. President Biden expected to sign the bill today. Welcome back to this special edition of the Mark Arum Show. Going live to Kyiv, Ukraine in just a second. Joe Lindsley is a reporter there, has been in Kyiv since the start of the Russia invasion of Kyiv, and he joins us live now on the Mark Arum Show. Joe, thanks so much for your time. How are you, sir?
Mark, good. Hello from Kyiv. It's a kind of a drizzly day here, but the only thing falling from the sky here right now is rain and not missiles. So a relatively calm day here. But at the moment, a little bit to the east of here, in the city of Sumy, there are explosions at the moment. I'd say that there's a good feeling here based on the recent developments in Washington.
Yeah, that would be my first question for you. The United States Congress and Senate finally approved this $60 billion or so in aid to Ukraine. What's been the reaction from the Ukraine government to this aid package and maybe more importantly, the Ukrainian citizens?
Well, you know, the first thing to emphasize is that, you know, that bill is it's not, you know, $60 billion that are going to show up here. It's evaluation of equipment, mainly of ammunition and equipment. And what's extraordinary is that, within this new package arriving, including material that Washington says will be here by the end of the week, includes long-range missile systems. And this is something that the White House has been reluctant to send to Ukraine. They've sent a smattering in 2022, a little bit in the fall of 2023. These ATACMS long-range systems. Ukraine has, and those who support Ukraine have been clamoring for this equipment, and the White House has been very reluctant to send it. But what's very interesting is that it was Mike Johnson, Speaker of the House, who not only finally changed his mind, it seems, and decided to push for the aid package, but he made the package stronger. And he said he put pressure on the Biden administration to send these long-range ATACMS. And what's very notable is the White House is being quite public. Well, not just the White House, but both Democrats and Republicans in Congress are being public about the fact that these long-range weapons are coming to Ukraine and that some of them will be here. About $1 billion worth of munitions and long-range weapons will be here by the end of the week. This is remarkable because usually when that type of aid comes to Ukraine, they don't advertise when it's going to come. The last batch was a small batch that came in October. It came under great secrecy, and no one knew about it until after the Ukrainians used it to destroy some Russian air bases on Ukrainian soil. So I think clearly Washington has found sort of a new attitude, and it seems that they want Russia to know that they believe in some kind of new possibilities for Ukraine.
It got to be a huge boost of morale, I would imagine, too, Joe, not only for the Ukrainian citizens, but the army as well, knowing, you know, ammunition reinforcements and gears on the way to help them fight back Russia.
Yeah, I mean, I speak often with friends at the front line, both Ukrainians and foreign volunteers, and, you know, it is an extremely tenuous and difficult situation. I was just there in Donbass a few weeks ago delivering supplies, and, you know, I don't know how much long they could have really held that line. So this is coming at precisely, you know, perhaps the last best chance to hold the line there. But meanwhile, you know, in Ukrainian cities, like the Ukrainian city of Kharkiv, which is 30 miles from Russia, it was bombed once again last night. It's very often attacked by the Russians. I'm often there. That, you know, I want Americans to feel like that city is so full of life. There are more people in that city now than there were a year ago. People are opening cafes and businesses, even though often they're only on generator power because of the attacks. And so the spirit is strong here. But knowing that this support is coming from Washington, it certainly is a boost, and it gives people a hope. I mean, everyone knows someone who's been killed or lost a limb in battle. And so this is a great hope. And I think if we look at many of the media reports, they said that Mike Johnson, the speaker, changed his mind because of CIA reports and intelligence reports. But I think if you look more closely, and from when I talked with Ukrainians who were in Washington recently, there was a delegation of Ukrainian evangelical leaders. This is mainly a Catholic and Orthodox country, but there's a lot of evangelicals here. And they went to Washington and they showed Mike Johnson what happens when Russia occupies Ukrainian territory. Some of the first targets of the Russian occupiers are evangelical churches and evangelical Christians. I think, based on what I've heard, that's what really got to Mike Johnson and got him to say, wait, this is a fight that we really have to get behind.
79-18, the bill passed in the Senate yesterday. Joe Lindsley joining us live from Kyiv, Ukraine on the Mark Arum Show. Militarily and strategically, the weapons that are going to be in Ukrainian soldiers' hands now, how is that going to benefit them in the war? What can we see moving forward from the Ukrainian army?
Well, you know, we've seen, you know, Washington, among others, you know, among all the supporters of Ukraine, Washington has been reluctant to let you to give Ukraine its blessing to attack places on Russian soil. And, you know, so with all the weapons that Washington has already sent to Ukraine, Ukrainians can only hit Russian targets on Ukrainian territory. The United Kingdom and France and others have been different. For example, the United Kingdom has long been sending these Storm Shadow missiles, which Ukrainians are using to great effect. I mean, Ukrainians have destroyed so much of Russia's navy in the Black Sea, even though Ukraine barely has a navy, using drones and using these Storm Shadow missiles from the UK. The UK has given its specific blessing to use these however they wish, but Washington has refused to do that. And so, for example, when I'm in a city like Kharkiv, because it's 30 miles from Russia, Ukrainians so far have not been able to use American weapons to hit just across the border and makes them a sitting duck. You're in Kharkiv City, the missiles almost always hit before the air raid alarm can sound because Ukrainians do not have this permission from Washington to go on the offensive. What Ukrainians have been doing in the meantime, using their ingenuity, building their own drones, they've been able to hit Russian oil refineries and Russian drone producing facilities deep within Russia. This has been some pretty extraordinary successes. But lately, every time they've done that, they get lectured by the White House, by the Biden administration. But what we're seeing now in the past few days, it seems to be a change in this. Mitch McConnell, minority leader in the Senate, was asked by a reporter, you know, will Ukrainians be able to use these new long-range weapons however they see fit? And Senator McConnell said yes. And I think Senator Warner from Virginia, a Democrat in the Intelligence Committee, echoed the same idea. I think we're starting to see a change that maybe at this point now Washington will give its blessing for Ukrainians to use these weapons however they need, because if they can never hit anything on Russian territory, then everything, you know, sort of near that front line is forever vulnerable and the situation can never change. And so there's a hope that this would transform the situation. And then beyond that, there's the basic need, which is, you know, the essence of the $60 billion bill for the past 5 months. The essence of it is ammunition. And that's what the guys need at the front. I mean, when I talk with soldiers at the front, a lot of the times they have to be very careful how they fire, because their ammunition has been running out. It's a dire situation. They're facing threats from ammunition and from incoming Russian kamikaze drones. And so they need the basic ammunition to hold the line, and then to try to push back. But what really could change things here is this extraordinary new sense in Washington, the long-range weapons that Ukrainians might be able to use in whatever way they see fit in order to push the Russians out.
Yeah, help certainly coming on the way. I want to end with this, Joe. Joe Linsley joining us live from Kyiv, Ukraine. We can't comprehend here in Metro Atlanta what it's like to live in a war zone for so many months and years. What is it like living in Kyiv in a time of war? What's your day-to-day life look like?
You know, it's sometimes hard to imagine. It's real. I mean, I'm very often in Kharkiv, 30 miles from Russia, and I'm there because the spirit of that city is incredible. But it's scary. When you get off at the train station, arriving there in Kharkiv, you know at any moment everything in that city could be hit. It's Russian roulette. I've been just mere blocks from missile strikes. At night when you go to sleep, you close your curtains as best you can. So at least, you know, if you don't take a direct hit, if it's a nearby hit, you don't wake up with glass in your face. That sound of the missile striking, it even as I think of it now, it sends chills to my whole system. It is an awful, hateful sound that people live with there all the time. I mean, sometimes you'll have, 15 missiles hitting within about 10 or 12 minutes there in Kharkiv City. And yet the next morning, the city is full of life. I got my regular coffee shop. They lost their windows because two missiles landed on the street one night. And I showed up there at 8 o'clock the next morning. And I assumed that they'd be closed and everyone just trying to repair stuff. They were open, serving great, like, Kim Hex and filtered coffee and cappuccinos on time, giving free coffee to rescue workers and sweeping up the debris. So it's a tale of two cities in a way, because, like, Kharkiv is one of the cleanest cities I've ever seen. The parks are immaculate, and yet they're, you block to block, you can see ruins. And at any moment, anyone can get hit. So it is this absolute spirit of defiance, and sort of everyone there, including foreigners. I know American women who come there to help in different ways. Everyone there has chosen they are afraid, but they've chosen to face their fear, and it creates such an incredible sense of solidarity. But when I come back here to say to Kyiv, which is much safer, I do feel a little bit of relief knowing you can sleep a little bit more peacefully further away from the border.
Yeah, closer to the front, obviously, the more tension there is and more stress on day-to-day life. Joe Linsley reporting live from Kyiv, Ukraine. Joe, thank you so much for your time. Please stay safe out there, buddy. All right. Sweet Pea jumped in on that. All right. So, really fascinating stuff there from Ukraine. We'll have more on the aid package and the TikTok ban. I know a lot of the youngins very upset about that. We'll be right back on the Mark Arum Show.
Tonight, we make Vladimir Putin regret the day he questioned American resolve.
Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer on the floor of the Senate yesterday after the aid package was passed. Again, $61 billion for Ukraine, $26 billion for Israel, $8-plus billion for Taiwan, and I forget the term they're using. Endo-Pacific Nation? I've never heard that term. Ectoskeleton? Endoskeleton?
Endoskeleton.
I don't know. So great stuff there from Joe Linsley. We're pulling live from Kyiv, Ukraine. I can't imagine what it's like to be now in Kyiv. It's a little further from the front, but obviously as the capital, it's, a target for Russia attacks. But eastern Ukraine on the Russian border, what life is like there, it's incomprehensible. And it's been going on for 2 years now, and it's unbelievable. We definitely want this war to end and end soon, so no more lives are lost on either side. I wonder what's going on inside of Russia. What Russia state media is telling their citizens about the war? Are they getting the straight scoop? You never know, like in North Korea state media or Iran state media, you never know what the citizens are actually hearing from the government. Do they know how bad it's going for Russia as far as casualties? Now, Russia has been in the advance in the last couple of months and taking some advantages there and taking more ground. But, 300,000 soldiers, I think, was the last number that Russian soldiers have died. I'll say this every day. Thank goodness we live in the United States of America. I want to update one more thing. I mentioned last segment how Mitch McConnell is kind of taking the gloves off now. And this was interesting. Any idea who he's blaming on why there were some folks that started anti-Ukrainian propaganda, pro-Russia propaganda? Can you?
Who he's blaming?
Who he's blaming? One person in particular who he's blaming?
No.
It's not Longoria.
No, it's not Longoria.
It's not me. Tucker Carlson.
Oh, really?
Yeah, listen to this audio clip.
I think the demonization of Ukraine began by Tucker Carlson, who, in my opinion, ended up where he should have been all along, which is interviewing Vladimir Putin. And so he had an enormous audience, which convinced a lot of rank-and-file Republicans that maybe this was a mistake.
What I find interesting in the last couple of weeks, as this foreign aid package was being negotiated and then voted on the floor of the House and then passed in the Senate last night, is, you know, we haven't really heard from former President Trump on this, who at times has been, you know, we have the infamous phone call with Zelensky and has kind of taken a pro-Russian stance and at times an anti-Ukrainian. He stayed out of it. He didn't weigh in, which I think eventually led to the passing of that. So I do give a tip of the hat to the former president for not sandbagging anything that could have slowed down the Ukraine aid package. And you heard the excitement of Joe Lindsay's voice there in Ukraine. Like they are pumped now that they're going to have actually ammunition to fight back against Russia. I saw a report, I think it was on 60 Minutes, where some of the Ukrainian soldiers were basically firing blanks just to sound like they had ammunition because they didn't have bullets for their guns, or sending drones with no explosive, just fake weapons. So now hopefully with that $61 billion, it'll level the playing field there in Ukraine and Russia. All right, complete updates on the Russia-Ukraine war throughout the show. When we come back, there has been no letdown or fallback from these campus protests, pro-Palestinian protests across the United States at institutions of higher learning. We'll get you caught up to date on that story when we come back. Also, TikTok ban. Steve Dennis, congressional reporter for Bloomberg, is going to join us live after the news at 11, break down the latest on that, causing a lot of agita for the younger kids out there. So much more to come. Stay with us, friends. It's the Mark Arum Show on WSB. Welcome back to the show, and a good Wednesday morning to you. Mark Arum here, you there. It's 10:05, 5 minutes after 10 o'clock. This is the Mark Arum Show live Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to noon on 95.5 WSB. The whole gang with us today, Deborah Green, the executive producer of the show, Longoria, the stoic Eskimo on the other side of the takeout window, Sweet Pea Purnell screens your calls. 15 minutes from now, our good friend Peter King from CBS Radio News is going to join us live. New airline fees rules that if you travel at all on airlines, whether it's our hometown Delta airline or any other airline, there's some new rules in place that will get you refunded some money if you are shorted what you desire. 11:05, the latest on the TikTok ban, which is now, the ban itself is in effect yet, and I don't think it's going to be eventually, but a lot of young folks are upset about losing the TikTok app off of their smartphone. Stephen Dennis is the congressional reporter from Bloomberg Television News. He is going to join us live at 11:05. And some new rules and laws taking effect and being signed here in the state of Georgia. Jonathan O'Brien will join us from the state capitol at 11:35. No Trump trial today, so take a day off. All you court watchers, you can take a day off there for that. I do want to update the campus unrest. We've been talking about this all week long at universities around the country. And the hotspot has been Columbia University in New York. Outside of Columbia University this morning, reporter Omar Jimenez.
So, yeah, those negotiations, there were two key moments where obviously the Columbia president set a midnight deadline for them to come to an agreement. Otherwise, they were going to have to find alternative options to dismantle the encampment. That deadline came and went. And then a university spokesman said within the few hours after that deadline that they actually did make some progress. And I want to tell you some of those negotiating tent poles, including dismantling and removing a significant number of tents inside on campus behind me, ensuring that those not affiliated with Columbia University will leave, that only university students participate in the protests, that they comply with all of the fire department intelligence requirements with respect to activities and safety, and take steps to make the encampment welcome to all people. Now, look, I spoke to some of the students in that encampment yesterday, and they claim they have been welcoming. But I also spoke to some Jewish students who said that some of them have felt intimidated. And that has been the crux of a lot of this protest. I also want to make a key distinction that there has been a difference in protests that have happened on campus versus off campus at the gates just behind me, where you see some of the barricades and some of the officers. The off campus ones can have non-students, because obviously it's the sidewalk here, but it's so much so to the point that the student protesters have tried to distance themselves from some of the messaging that comes on the outside, because those tend to be a little bit more violent in nature, and at least in implication as well. Now, look, as you mentioned, Speaker Johnson is expected to come visit here later today to meet with Jewish students to talk about the, quote, troubling rise of anti-Semitism on American college campuses. And remember, there are House Republicans who have called for the Columbia University president, Manoush Shafiq, to resign over how she has handled this situation here. So obviously we'll see what comes of his visit. He will likely see the encampment for himself, hear from some of those Jewish students, but not all of whom have felt uncomfortable with what has happened, but clearly a good number of them have.
Yeah, good on Speaker Johnson for making that visit to Columbia University. Now, as I said yesterday, Deborah, Columbia University is different. It's in New York City, right? So like a Georgia State here. And Columbia University, for the actual campus of Columbia University, they should be held responsible for students feeling threatened or terrorized. They can't really do what happens outside of the campus. And as Omar Jimenez said in the report, you know, a lot of these protests have been infiltrated by non-students. So Columbia is buttoning up, make sure no non-students can get on for these protests, but they really can't do anything once they get off campus. And that then it turns to the New York Police Department. I guess if there is any good news, is that we're nearing the end of the spring semester. So hopefully, you know, a couple more weeks of this. Again, I am not against peaceful protests. That has been historically what college campuses have done throughout generations, whether it was the Vietnam War, the Korean War. We should embrace peaceful protests and the First Amendment right to that. But when they become terroristic or threatening and people on campus don't feel safe, that's when the administration has to step in. And Columbia hasn't done that. Yale University hasn't really done that. And we've seen these spread throughout. But again, hopefully, you know, these protesters, the kids, not the outside protesters, once the school year ends, they're going to be like, all right, you know, I'm going to go on.
I got summer vacation.
Yeah, exactly right. So, but we'll continue to monitor that. Pete Buttigieg was on CNN this morning. He was initially talking to them about the new airline fees rules, but he was asked about this, the campus protest. And the question was, I know you grew up with parents that were university professors. Obviously, the protest on college campuses across the country, pro-Palestinian protest, where's the line between free speech and legitimate protest against Israeli policy and perhaps being threatening to some students at the college?
Look, no one should ever feel threatened, harassed, intimidated as they are going about their studies. Universities by design are a place for free speech, a place for the vigorous contest of ideas, especially when there is the kind of anguish that so many are experiencing over the suffering that is taking place in Gaza and the suffering of the hostages, Israeli hostages as well. That should never, ever lead to an environment of harassment, of intimidation, or of violence.
Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg on the campus uprisings. Obviously, the newsroom is following this. If anything big pops on that story, we'll break in and bring it to you live. Can I talk about something that is a little lighter, Deborah Green, for a second?
Definitely.
So there's the Marvel movies franchise, right? That is huge.
Yeah,
just absolutely
you watched
huge.
Them all?
I'm trying to tick them off. These superhero movies aren't my favorite, but I do when I want to get away, when I want to escape, I will watch them. So those are the Marvel. But what's the other comic universe?
DC
Comics, I think.
That's like Batman.
So James Gunn is taking over. You know him and love him from Gilmore Girls, but now he's a director, and he's been charged with taking those DC comics and doing what they did with Marvel And my favorite superhero growing up was Superman. I mean, how could you not just love Superman? I love that guy. The original Superman movie with Christopher Reeves, the old black and white Superman TV show. I grew up on that. Superman's my dude. Well, James Gunn is making a Superman film, and he's making it in Georgia, and he's looking for extras.
An open call for actors to work as extras in a new Warner Brothers Superman movie filming in Georgia was announced. The film, originally titled Genesis, is now simply called Superman and is part of James Gunn's DC Universe reboot. The casting call is specifically looking for South Asian and Caucasian actors for filming in Middle Georgia. Interested individuals can apply by emailing their information to Zoltar, Z-O-L-T-A-R, at centralcasting.com. The movie crew will be in Macon for weeks to prepare for filming, with scenes also expected to be shot at Trilith Studios in Fayetteville. I'm Thomas Cage.
So they're filming in Macon. So if we can get Longoria an extra part, you could just crash it.
Didn't it say Caucasian and South Africans? We're out.
Yeah.
No, not South Africans.
South Asians.
Well, yeah. We're still out.
Yeah.
We can pass Longoria off as.
That's cultural appropriation. Then.
Samoan.
It's Samoan. Yeah, I could be.
Oh
Samoan.
Yeah, we're gonna. He's gonna be in the Moana. Yeah. I don't want him to double dip. Yeah. But anyway, I'm excited. More movie business for the state of Georgia, and I'm excited that James Gunn from Gilmore Girls is going to make a new Superman movie. I'm excited about that. All right, coming up next on the Mark Arum Show.
The Biden administration announces new rules on some of the fees that airlines can charge and refunds for delayed flights and lost luggage. I'm Peter King.
Peter King joins us live next on the Mark Arum Show. 10:20 on a very busy news day Wednesday. Welcome back to the Mark Arum Show with you till noon. You might remember over spring break, Longoria flew out to Texas to see his family and take the girls out there. And his flight was delayed like 8 or 9 hours. And I have audio, Deborah, of Longoria asking the airline for some sort of compensation.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Yeah, they said no to Longoria's request, but maybe in the future that'll change. Joining us live, aviation correspondent, longtime friend of the show, Peter Pedro King. Good morning, my friend.
You know, Longoria sounds an awful lot like Leslie Nielsen.
He does indeed. And he didn't know we were recording him. You know, I had one of those secret mics on him. Peter, this is, you know, Atlanta, home of the busiest airport in the world, Hartsfield-Jackson International. So many of the listeners travel. And listen, sometimes you hit speed bumps, literally and figuratively, when you're dealing with air travel. And usually you'd have to, if you wanted compensation, you'd have to ask for it, request it, jump through hoops. But it sounds like there's going to be a change to the process.
Yeah, the Biden administration and the Transportation Department has been working on revising the rules for a while, and this morning they announced it early on that when it comes to a refund, you are entitled to a quick refund if you have a major delay or other significant event affecting your flight. There are also new rules involving lost luggage, lost services, things like that, but let's start with the delayed flights, since that's where Longoria was stuck for 9 hours.
Yes.
Was he stuck there or where?
I just totally made that up. Were you delayed at all, Longoria, in your trip to Texas?
No.
Yeah, that was fake.
Flying out of Corpus, you never delayed.
Yeah, no delays out of Corpus.
You lied to me. I'm done with you guys. Anyway, talking about delays, here's the thing. Transportation Department says the rules will spell out exactly when you are owed a refund for a delayed flight. It's something that used to be up to the airlines, but now the government says you're due a refund for delays of 3 hours on a domestic flight, 6 hours or more for an international flight. Now, the airlines can still offer you another flight or credit, but you have the option as the passenger to say, yeah, that's great, or uh-uh, I want my money back.
So Peter, hold on a second.
Applying to lost luggage, seat selection, and internet service that doesn't work once you get on the plane. And the charges for things like checked luggage, carry-on luggage, flight change fees, all of that will now have to be shown to you as you log on when you log on to an airline website, that's going to have to be one of the first things that you see under the new rules. It's, you know, a lot of disclosure here and big changes for the airline industry. The Transportation Department says Americans could save somewhere in the neighborhood of $500 million a year on what many call these junk fees.
Wow. So hypothetically, I'm flying to Vegas for Memorial Day. I got a great fare, got a great hotel deal. If my flight is delayed, let's say 4 hours, and God forbid that happens, but I get my ticket refunded. I get how does the monetary value work as far as a delayed flight?
Okay, it's my understanding that you are offered the chance to get another flight, or a flight credit, or a refund. And I'm assuming that the refund would be whatever you paid.
Interesting. And I'd still get to take that flight, or no? It's one or the other.
You know, that's a great question. And I have not seen anything that verifies that,
yeah,
which way it goes.
So you mentioned some of the other stuff. That I remember I took a flight from San Francisco to Atlanta, and the in-flight entertainment system wasn't working. Just in my seat. And Delta was like, they gave me like 15,000 sky miles as an apology. It's for a malfunction like that, Peter, that I can now have the option of getting money from the airline for that.
Yeah, but you know what? They offered you 15,000 sky miles. I think, you know, my personal opinion is that's very reasonable.
Oh, I took it.
if you have a chance to redeem those sky miles in a reasonable way. I mean, you know that with the different airline mileage programs, sometimes you really, really have to jump through hoops in order to make things happen. And some airlines are tougher than others. But, you know, that to me sounds perfectly reasonable.
Peter King, what's the timeline on this going to affect?
It's going to be phased in. All of this will be phased in over the next year or so. So, you know, it's not all going to happen at once, but be prepared for some of those changes if you're flying, and be, as always, an aware consumer.
Yeah, I had one flight that we were flying to Portugal, and we had a layover in Boston, and our flight from Boston to Portugal got canceled, and our hometown airline, they were great. They rebooked us. They got us a hotel room and food vouchers. So I guess it depends on the airline how they treat you when stuff goes wrong, because inevitably things do go wrong.
Well, certainly they do, and it's in their best interest to treat you well. Think about it. In this instant social media society that we have right now, bad publicity is not a good thing. And whenever you have major delays and airline meltdowns, whether it's Delta, Southwest, United, or anybody else, it all goes online. It goes on X or Instagram or Facebook or wherever immediately. And the airlines don't like that.
Yeah, no doubt. And social media has changed the game because, 20 years ago, if you got screwed over by the airline, there was nothing you could do. Now, any Tom, Dick, or Harry can post on social media and be like, hey, I got, and they'll automatically reply to you really quick. So that
exactly.
has changed
the game. Exactly, with video and with audio and the whole nine yards.
Pedro, so good to have you, man. Hope you're doing well.
Mark, all is fine here. Congratulations on the great start that your Braves have. And I wish you guys luck, except when you play the Mets.
Understood, my friend. Understood. How about Max Fried yesterday? Maximum Fried throws a Maddux yesterday. Complete game shutout. No walks under 100 pitches. All right. Max Fried has a non-compete in his contract with the Braves. I have a non-compete contract with WSB Radio. Might those be going away? We'll go in-depth next on The Mark Arum Show.
The Mark Arum Show is performed before a live studio audience.
10:37, Mark Arum and crew with you till noon. Before we get into the non-compete and the TikTok stuff, you heard just another award-winning newscast from Sabrina Cupid there at 10:30. Always great newscast, Sabrina. There was a story, though, that caught my attention about old age and our perception of when old age begins.
Right.
What, can you repeat that again for me? I want to make sure I got everything right. Because
yeah.
I agree with it for sure.
The bottom line is basically the older you get, the later you think old age is. On average, they ask people in their mid-60s, what do you consider old age? And most said 75. But the older they got, the older that age got. So.
Yeah, I mean, it's all relative, right? When you're 15, you think 35 is ancient.
Right.
And then you get to 35 and you're like, oh, 70, that's old. Mm-hmm. And now at 50, which is blows my mind that I'm 50 years old because I'm still
welcome to the club.
Yeah, I'm still 23 or 12, depending on the day.
Right.
But now I'm like, oh, old age is 80. You know?
Yeah,
it's crazy. I think generationally, too, as life expectancies, aside from the COVID years, have been going up, we are living longer. And what's the phrase, Deborah? 40's the new 30 or, you know, they're...
Yeah, and it's like 50's the new 40 and 60's the new 50. Yeah.
If you look at me at 50 to what, like, my grandfather looked at 50, it's crazy. Sabrina is still 29, which is fantastic.
I'll pay you later.
There you go. But I'm glad you brought that up the story because, ironically, I saw this video on social media. It might have been Facebook. It might have been Instagram. And I don't know if it was a philosopher. It didn't label who the guy was talking. But he sounded very philosophic. And it spoke to me. And he was talking to a group of people about, you know, because we all bitch about getting older. Like, I just bitched about it. I'm 50. How does that happen?
Right.
And this, I'm going to call him a philosopher. I have no idea if he was. He goes, think about you in 30 years. So me in 30 years, I'll be 80. You would give everything you had at age 80 to go back to where you are right now.
Exactly.
So the point was, don't appreciate what you have now. Like I'm not even going to say fairly decent shape, but I'm functional physically and mentally.
You're a fairly healthy person. Like, you don't have any chronic diseases or illnesses.
So in 30 years, if I make it 30 years, 80-year-old Mark Arum would say, take everything I have and let me go back to just be 50 again.
Right. So when you hear those 18-year-olds talking about, oh, I'm so fat, you just want to slap.
Yeah, I remember when I...
just be quiet.
I'm so fat. Yeah, exactly. I remember when I was 27, Sabrina, and it was my 27th birthday, and I was in the newsroom. And Matt Reese, who used to work here, was there. And I was complaining, like, oh, I'm 27. I think he wanted to punch me.
Right.
He was like, are you crazy? You're 27. And now in retrospect, like, God, I didn't appreciate that I was 27 years old.
I think 27 was the first time I felt old, too, because you're done with school. Like, I had a full-time job at that point. I already bought my first house. Like, I felt like so much of an adult.
That's
why I felt old, and I still had friends that were still in school and still, like, partying every night.
But to what that philosopher said, right now, I would give everything I have to go back to be 27. And eventually, I'll give everything I have to get back to right now. So the point is, appreciate where you are now in life and don't long for what you had, because someday you're going to long for what you have now, right? That ties it in pretty well.
I love it. Enjoy the day.
Exactly right.
Enjoy the day. Enjoy where you are. And we're all beautiful in our own way.
Aw, there you go. Sabrina Cupid, star of the show early on. Thank you, Sabrina. We'll hear from you again with the news at 11. I just thought it was eye-opening. Now, to be fair, I was in the bathroom when I was watching this video, so, you know, take everything.
And you're like, I wish I had my 27-year-old stomach.
Yeah. No, my stomach's been bad. And by the way, people are worried about me. I go to the doctor. I know what's wrong with me. My stomach issue the other day was me making a poor choice. It was me saying, oh, I can have Chipotle. It's fine. And I got I ordered it with the spicy red sauce. So it's just, everything's fine. My doctor, I get checks up all the time. I appreciate everyone's concern, but that was a user error. I shouldn't have gotten anything with the hot sauce on it, but I appreciate all the outpouring of concern. All right, moving along. Non-competes. I have had a non-compete contract here at WSB Radio since I first signed a contract here. I've been here since 1997. I didn't know that non-competes were a thing outside of radio and television.
I've never heard of them. They talk about fast food restaurants. I'd never heard of them
in
fast food restaurants.
So I just thought non-competes, that was just a radio and TV thing.
Leslie had one from her old job.
I had no idea. So, for example, my contract with WSB Radio, the last contract I signed, I think, was a 3-year deal with a 6-month non-compete, which means at the end of my contract, I can't go work for another radio or TV station in Atlanta for 6 months. And it adds pressure to employees. Like, Deborah, you have a non-compete, I'm sure.
I do not. I have nothing.
Oh, look at you. Longoria, no?
Nope.
What the hell, man?
Yeah, we're poachable.
So
yeah,
basically, not that I'd ever want to leave WSB Radio, but in the past, I've had opportunities. I've had offers. And that 6-month non-compete is daunting. It's like, all right, do I want this new job, but I can't work there for 6 months. What am I going to do for money? It's very, it's a stressful situation. Apparently, radio and TV is not the only area where you have non-compete. So here's the headline. The Federal Trade Commission, the FTC, voted 3-2 on Tuesday to ban non-compete agreements that prevent tens of millions of employees from working for competitors or starting a competing business after they leave a job. CBS News correspondent Jolyn Kent has more on who is most impacted by non-competes. All that lay, I did the perfect lead up to the audio and then I didn't have my pot up. Anyway, Jolyn Kent.
Industry by industry, you could argue that certain industries need non-competes more than others. But if you really look at the U.S. economy right now, so much of every company is driven by tech and innovation. And so that's, it's impossible to say, you know, which should and shouldn't have it. That very much is like a subjective question. But I do know that low-paid workers are the hardest hit by these restrictive work agreements.
So the tech industry, I get, right? If you're a programmer for Google, Google doesn't want you to leave and go to Microsoft. So now, you know, understanding it, I can see why non-competes are there in that technology. You don't want to have other companies poaching your best coders or whatever those jobs are. But it's the lower income that she mentioned are most impacted. And again, tens of millions of Americans have non-compete situations, and it's fast food. This one boggled my mind. And I love their sandwiches. I have nothing against the company. But, and I don't know if it's in Atlanta or where, but Jimmy John's, the sub shop, freaky fast.
Yeah.
I get the tuna, no sprouts.
Okay.
It's a great sandwich. They have the workers at Jimmy John's. Again, I have a 6 month non-compete. I can't go to another radio station or TV station in Atlanta for 6 months after my contract. Jimmy John's employees have a 2 year non-compete. 2 years. Like, you make sandwiches for us, you can't go to Subway for 2 years. You can't go to Jersey Mike's for 2 years. Wow. You can't go to...
Is it just sandwiches?
No,
Is it all fast food?
I think it's all...
It's an entry-level position,
yeah.
Right? Like, you go to those places knowing I don't need a lot of experience. I could figure it out. I know how to make a sandwich. And then they tell you you can't go work at another fast food restaurant
for two years. I don't know how they can, you know, police that. Like, let's say, Deborah, you get a job at Jimmy John's because you could make a sandwich.
Sometimes
great.
They'll call for references, right? Like, oh, did this person work here?
Well, do you think that Jimmy John's manager is going to go to Firehouse Subs and be like, all right, making sure Deborah Green's not here? You know, I don't know how, but that's crazy. A 2 year non-compete for Jimmy John's employees. That's mind blowing. Again, I don't know if they'd check up. And if you are going to, if you work at Jimmy John's and you're going to apply for a job at Jersey Mike's, you just don't put the Jimmy John's guy down as a reference.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
Well, you need the experience.
The assistant to the regional manager is going to go to every sub shop in town.
They must have some secrets over there at Jimmy John's.
Isn't that crazy? A 2 year non-compete.
In radio, that's a lot.
Yeah, a nuclear physicist should have a 2 year non-compete.
Right, but not Jimmy John's.
Freaky fast, but not their non-competes. They're not freaky fast. They're freaky long. Anyway, do any of you have non-competes? I'm just curious. Ignorance is my middle name, apparently, because I didn't think any other professions had a non-compete. What's your job, and do you have a non-compete with it? 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Social media is active as well, at Mark Arum, MarkArum.
We can wish for a world where the responsibilities of leadership don't fall on us, or we can act like we understand that they do.
Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell yesterday after passing of the foreign aid package in the Senate that also includes a TikTok ban. We're going to go in depth after the news at 11. Stephen Dennis, Bloomberg congressional reporter, is going to talk about the TikTok ban and the outrage that some corners are having about the possibility of losing their favorite app. In the meantime, though, we're continuing our discussion of non-competes. Again, the FTC voted 3-2 to get rid of non-competes. Now, there are some states, Deborah, where it's already against the law. Here in Georgia, it's called a right-to-work state, which means I don't have a right to work. I have a 6 month.
Like unions and everything, they don't hold much here.
I have a 6 month non-compete from WSB Radio, and I signed my contract knowing that. My agents in the past have tried to get rid of that, and management's been like, no. But maybe they're going away. I didn't know that non-competes existed elsewhere. We're going to get to your calls in just a second, but more on the Jimmy John's. So this came out a couple months ago. According to Jimmy John's agreement, a worker is prohibited from taking a job at a competing sandwich shop for a period of 2 years following employment at Jimmy John's. A competitor is any business that derives 10% or more of its revenue from the sale of sandwiches and that resides within 3 miles of a Jimmy John's location. All right, so I guess you have to get map out.
They're all kind of in the same area. But what's considered a sandwich? Because some people say like...
A hot dog's a sandwich.
Well, but is a burger a sandwich?
I don't know.
What about Chick-fil-A's chicken sandwich?
But the 10%... So if I worked at Jimmy John's and I left to get a job at the Publix deli and making pub subs there, does Publix make more than 10% of the revenue?
Oh, probably not.
So I got to ask for financial disclosures before I leave Jimmy John's.
That's crazy.
And then you got to get out Google Maps. Like, all right, is there a Jimmy John's within 3 miles of this Firehouse Subs? Because I can't work. That's exhausting.
It's too much for a sandwich shop.
Well, apparently Jimmy John's, they impart some major wisdom on their employees that they don't want to lose them.
Like I guess so.
We are not losing you to Quiznos, pal.
Oh, Quiznos. I used to love Quiznos.
Did you have a non-compete at Wiener Schnitzel?
No.
No? All right. I never had a non-compete at the bowling alley I worked at or anything like that.
I've never been that important.
You are that.
Newspaper or anything?
I know right now Ken is listening. He's going to have you both sign non-competes before the end of the day.
We'll see.
I'll see about that.
Casey's in Canton. Casey, you have a non-compete. What business are you in, Case?
Yes, sir. Thank you for taking my call. Longtime listener, first-time caller. Yes, sir. I do, in the Metro Atlanta area, I do commercial framing and drywall sales. And typically there is a 2 to 3 year non-compete that they try to get you to sign.
Within that industry, though, right, Casey? You can leave and go work at Home Depot if you want, but you just can't go to a competitor.
That is correct. Okay. Yes, that is correct. Yeah, it's pretty crazy. The last one that they wanted me to sign, a company that I work for, they wanted me to sign a 3-year non-compete for any competitor in the Southeast United States.
Oh, my God. Not just the metro area.
Yes, correct.
Did you sign it?
No. I told him, I said, I will not sign it. And, you know, if you want to, you can go ahead and fire me. I don't care. I ain't signing that.
Wow. All right. So commercial construction non-competes. Walter's down in Rex, one of my favorite places. What's up, Walt?
How you doing this morning, sir?
Excellent, brother.
So in the mechanical industry, whether it be automotive, industrial equipment, cranes, it doesn't matter. Most of them try to get you to sign a non-compete for at least 1 year, some of them up to 2 years, especially the dealership platforms. They're horrible about it. And
do you mean by dealership? Give me a specific job in the dealership platform that you're talking about.
If you're a mechanic in the automotive industry, okay, working for Chevrolet or Ford or any of them, and then or the industrial side like forklifts, whether it be Hyster or Crown or, you know, Link Bell for the cranes, any of the mechanical industries that has to do with that specific brand's
gotcha
software, et cetera.
But you can leave the industry and go, you know, work at Wendy's.
You can go to, yeah, well, that, or if you're, let's say you work for a Chevrolet, you can't go to another Chevrolet dealership at all, but depending upon your non-compete, you can go to Ford or Chrysler or something else. It's not a direct competition with that particular platform.
Interesting. All right. Who knew? I love these. I want to hear more industries that you have to deal with non-competes. I literally thought we were on an island. It's us, Jimmy John's, and construction, equipment. So keep the calls coming at 404-872-0750 or tweet them at me at Mark Arum, M-A-R-K-A-R-U-M. Though, when we come back after news, weather, and traffic, updating the TikTok ban. Major story. Our coverage continues next on the Martha Arum Show.
No, I want this town to be near you. I stand alone.
11:05 on this wonderful Wednesday. Welcome back, friends. Mark Arum and crew with you till noon. Coming up this hour, we're going to go live to Capitol Hill. Reporter Jonathan O'Brien will detail new laws set to take effect here in Georgia. Deborah Green's got tickets to give away to see Heart and Cheap Trick. And I want to continue to talk about that non-compete story we were just discussing before the news. The FTC votes 3-2 to get rid of non-competes. And I'm going to get to your calls in a few minutes, but I got some reaction on Twitter, Deborah, for other industries, because I just thought it was radio and TV that had non-competes. Mick says his buddy got let go by a vodka company, had a non-compete for 6 months. I guess couldn't go to another liquor distributor. Doctors apparently have non-compete clauses. And UGA dog used to work at a Bobcat store. He had to sign a 3-year non-compete within a 100-mile radius of their store. 3 years. That's more severe than the Jimmy John's non-compete. I'm assuming our next guest, Stephen Dennis from Bloomberg News. You have a non-compete with Bloomberg, Stephen?
I don't think so.
Oh, all right. Well, I forget I bring it up then in case Mike's listening. Do not sign. Congressional reporter Stephen Dennis to a non-compete. Stephen joining us live. A lot of consternation about the foreign aid package that was passed yesterday in the Senate. That includes a TikTok ban for the millennials and Gen Zers listening that are up in arms about this. What exactly was signed yesterday or heading to the president's desk to be signed today?
Yeah, so the president just signed it, and basically it sets a clock for when ByteDance, which is the Chinese parent company of TikTok, has to divest its stake to January 19th in 270 days. There could be a 90-day waiver after that if things are moving along towards divestment. But so far, there's no indication that ByteDance is willing to sell or that China's government would authorize such a sale. And so this is heading towards court. The company has indicated it's going to file suit and try to argue that this is a violation of First Amendment rights of its users. But, you know, I think they have a tough battle here because there was a big bipartisan consensus in Congress that TikTok's data can be misused by Beijing, and also that it could be used in the future as a propaganda outlet for China. So those are the two big concerns that you hear from Democrats and Republicans who overwhelmingly backed it. I mean, this thing had effectively 80 votes in the Senate yesterday. And well over 300 votes in the House.
Now, Stephen, this January 19th deadline, can that be pushed back by court delays and legal issues?
Yeah, I mean, courts could set that deadline aside while they work through the legal fight. And I'm sure TikTok and their lawyers will be trying to comb through any possible constitutional problems with this bill. And, you know, sometimes courts move very, very slowly. So that could potentially kick it down the road months or even years. And then, you know, you got a new Congress coming in on January 3rd after the election. You're going to have a new president on January 20th or potentially Joe Biden. So, you know, this could be an election year issue as well, because President Trump, who when he was president, was moving forward on banning TikTok, but has since changed his tune recently. And so we'll see if that if people are willing to change their vote for president over something like TikTok or not.
Now, I'm not a legal expert. I'm not a constitutional expert. But I know what goes on in the world. And that app, the TikTok app, is so widely popular here and so profitable for ByteDance. I can't see this a resolution coming where TikTok is banned in the United States. ByteDance loses billions of dollars. I mean, at the end of the game, money talks. And I can't imagine ByteDance is going to lose that profit center without trying to do something to save its app in the United States.
Yeah, I mean, they've already spent millions and millions and millions of dollars on lobbyists, on advertising. They spent a lot of time and a lot of money lobbying Congress, and all that was a flop so far. So, the question now is, do they, in addition to turning to the courts and getting some very good lawyers, do they also try to continue to make this an issue in the public sphere, having their users continuing to pressure Congress, trying to make it a political issue, hoping that Trump wins, for example, and reverses this somehow in the next Congress? And then there's a question of other suitors. You know, does Steven Mnuchin, who used to be Trump's Treasury Secretary and is trying to put together a group to buy it, can they come up with enough money that changes some minds over in Beijing? Or do some of the big tech giants in America who have the kind of money it would take to buy TikTok come forward with offers? And then, of course, you end up with the issue of antitrust concerns. If it's already a company that's a social media giant, Microsoft had previously had some interest, for example, but they already have LinkedIn. They already have ties to ChatGPT. Do the antitrust hawks in the administration want to have that kind of a tie-up? So I think that this story is just getting started, and it's going to be very messy until there's a resolution one way or the other.
All right, so for the listeners that are freaking out right now, whether they're small business owners or just TikTok fans or influencers that are making money and their job is on TikTok, worst case scenario for those folks listening right now, January 19th, that is when that app will go away. But that's a moving date. But right now, worst possible scenario for the folks listening is January 19th.
That's right. That's the earliest the app would shut down unless ByteDance decides to threatened to shut it down earlier as sort of a political cudgel.
Interesting. Well, you had to throw that in there. Now everyone's got heartburn. All right. Steven Dennis is on Twitter at Steven T. Dennis. And you're on, what's your TikTok handle, Steven?
I don't have a TikTok yet, but at Steven T. Dennis is my X handle.
There you go. Hey, Steven, I really appreciate your time, buddy. Thanks for the update.
All right. Thank you.
There you go. Steven T. Dennis, not on TikTok. I'm on TikTok, but I'm not on TikTok. I don't even have the app on my phone anymore. Intern Stefan was supposed to be posting from California.
Yeah, he failed.
Yeah, he bailed on that. All right, so January 19th, I think there'll be a resolution. They're making too much money off that thing for it to go away. All right, when we come back, the FTC votes 3-2 to get rid of non-compete contracts. Who knew so many industries had non-competes? Are you currently in a non-compete contract? 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. 11:18 on the Mark Arum Show. Still to come, Deborah's got another pair of tickets to see Heart and Cheap Trick. That's an amazing gift. Coming up after the news at 11:35, a new bill signed here in Georgia by Governor Brian Kemp. Jonathan O'Brien will join us live from the state capitol. But we're continuing our discussion of non-compete contracts. In case you missed it earlier in the program, I am currently under a non-compete here at WSB Radio, which means after my contract ends, I can't work for another TV or radio station in the Metro Atlanta area for 6 months. And I, you know, was foolish to think that non-competes didn't exist elsewhere in other professions. We're going to get to your calls in just a second. But in case you missed the story, here's correspondent Jolene Kent explaining.
President Biden certainly supports this. His FTC chair, Lina Khan, was a leader in making this happen. She thinks the FTC chair believes that these non-competes are robbing people of their economic liberty. Thousands of workers made their voices heard. They want this to not exist anymore. But you also have the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, which represents scores of American businesses who say this is unlawful and this is a power grab by the FTC and it will ultimately harm American businesses and innovation.
So aside from radio, TV, and Jimmy John's, what other professions require non-compete contracts? Stephanie's in East Atlanta. Stephanie, welcome to the Mark Arum Show.
Hi, thanks. My mother years ago worked for the IRS, and they had a non-compete that you couldn't do the tax services.
Oh, so she couldn't go to H&R Block after or something like that.
Yeah, I don't know how long it was because I was younger and didn't care about that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But, I don't know if they still have it, but that's what it was.
Do you remember how long the non-compete was for your mom?
No, but I'm interested. She retired from IRS after 35 years, but she didn't want to.
Does that give you blanket tax immunity now, Stephanie?
At least back then, before things got so complicated, she taught us how to do all of our own.
Oh, good.
Taxes.
Excellent. Now I trust Brass Tax Accounting for all my tax needs online at brass.tax. So Sanjay could go work for the IRS now, but he just couldn't go back to Brass Tax. So he doesn't have a non-compete there. Bill's in Grayson. Bill, what's cooking, buddy?
Hey, Mark. Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
Hey, I had to sign a non-compete
back in around 2003. I went to work for a private investigative firm.
Ooh.
And there were several other investigators that worked there. But, you know, the guy that owned the company, his clients were a majority of insurance companies. And as an investigator, the state has requirements. And so we all had to earn our operator's license mm-hmm. so that we could work within the state of Georgia. And some of the guys would moonlight and work for, you know, on the side because they had their license under the company's name. And he was kind of realizing that, you know, there's a possibility some of us might be able to take some of his business. So
gotcha. So, Bill, the non-compete you had meant you couldn't go to another investigative firm, right? So you could get another job. You can go sell cars. You just couldn't go to another investigative firm.
I could not be an investigator for myself and take and use the clients that he already had. That was what he believed was his legal ability to make us sign this.
Gotcha. I think I would enjoy being a private investigator. Not like Magnum.
Detective, private investigator.
I've got a buddy, JT, that's a PI, and it sounds so fascinating what he does. I think I'd be good. A lot of it's just sitting in cars, drinking coffee, eating donuts, watching cheating husbands and stuff like that. I could do that. I could do that for sure. Hey, appreciate the call, buddy. Dave's in Silver Creek. Dave, welcome to the show.
Hey, Mark. You have some great topics, by the way. So
thank you.
Hey, so I was a operations manager for Honda Motors over in Lincoln, Alabama, just east of it, Birmingham.
Mm-hmm.
I had about 200 employees. We had a total of about 5,000 employees.
Wow.
Huge assembly plant. We produced about 1,600 vehicles a day. I had a two-year non-compete. Prior to that, though, I worked for Kia Hyundai just down the road over in West Point, Georgia. And but I could understand why they had me sign that. There were quite a few proprietary
So your non-compete was in the automotive industry. You couldn't take a job in the automotive industry. Was it just
right? I couldn't go work for Ford assembly.
Well, could you work for Ford in California? Was it or is it just?
I don't recall.
Yeah.
I really don't recall. But
all right, because I understand. Like again, I don't want to break my non-compete in case the bosses are listening. But my non-compete is specifically the Metro Atlanta area. Where I could, if when my contract ends at WSB, I could go work at a station in New York or Texas or Wisconsin. That would not violate my non-compete. It's a regional geographical restriction. Trey in Peachtree Corners joins us on the Mark Arum Show. Hey, Trey.
Hey, how are you?
What's up, brother?
And we have, I run a post audio recording facility over here in Peachtree Corners. And we actually employ non-competes for our employees.
What's the job exactly? I've never heard of post-audio recording.
Yeah, so being able to take in certain movie projects and do the overdubbing of vocal acting, being able to do like sound effects and sound scoring for different soundtracks, stuff like that.
So the non-compete you have is you can't go to another audio recording company.
Yeah, I mean, you can't take the proprietary stuff that we've got and be able to go to another recording facility here in the Metro Atlanta area.
Gotcha.
And be able to utilize it there because sometimes these projects are years in the making.
Sure.
So
I got to jump in, Trey. We got a break for news in a second, but are you looking for voices? I've got three talented voices on the Mark Arum Show if you need any help.
Absolutely. I'll stay on the line for that.
There you go. All right. Actually, because I got to give some tickets away. So sweet. Just go to markarum.com. And I'll get you guys some side work. You have a wonderful voice,
Deborah. Yeah, we have no non-competes.
Longoria has an amazing voice. His voice is recognizable. He goes out in public.
That is correct,
sir. That is, he goes out in public like, you're Longoria. No one ever recognizes my voice. Trey, markarum.com, and give Deborah your information. All right, when we come back, Jonathan O'Brien is going to join us live from the state capitol. Governor Kemp signing some new bills into law here. We'll update that next on the Mark Arum Show.
He packed in
a camel, and a kangaroo. Welcome back to the Mark Arum Show. Time to give back to the listeners, Deborah Green. Let's do the 19th caller. I'm feeling frisky today. 19th caller to 404-872-0750 wins what, my friend?
A pair of tickets to go check out Heart and Cheap Trick at State Farm Arena on May 10th. It's Mother's Day weekend, so if your mom's a rock and roll lover,
yeah, absolutely. All right, 19th caller to Sweet Pea at 404-872-0750. Court criminal trial today, but Supreme Court currently hearing arguments on emergency abortion care. Longoria, can we dip live into CNN right here? This is Judge Samuel Alito hearing from the Solicitor General.
But Idaho would deny women treatment in that circumstance, even though it's senseless.
Doesn't what I've read to you show that the statute imposes on the hospital a duty to the woman, certainly, and also a duty to the child.
Newsroom is monitoring the Supreme Court arguments, and we'll have updates throughout the day on 95.5 WSB. But back under the Gold Dome, Governor Kemp signing some bills into law today. Joining us live on the Mark Arum Show, Capitol reporter for WSB Radio, Jonathan O'Brien. How are you, Jonathan?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Excellent. So always something new when it comes to government here in the state of Georgia. What bills did the governor sign into law today, my friend?
Right. Well, he signed a lot. I think I said on the morning news that his pen was working overtime today because he started at 8 o'clock this morning signing bills. The first bill you mentioned there in the tease having to do with squatting, and making it easier for folks who own properties to be able to remove people who illegally, set up camp there on their property and to get them out of their house. It makes it more like an eviction. We see these stories all the time. I remember reporting on something over there in Austell where they have folks not just going into abandoned houses. Sometimes they find houses that are for rent and then they come up with a fake lease and then they pretend that they are renting it out to someone else. And then some folks can be unintentionally squatting in addition to those people who set up.
It really became an epidemic. I'm so glad that the legislature did something about it because, God forbid, you have a home and it gets squatted. You are basically powerless, and this new law will help prevent that.
It sure will, and it will put some criminal penalties, including possible jail time and a fine, on folks who do it.
All right, so squatter law. What else did Governor Kemp sign today?
He signed a bill having to do with veterans. It was a series of bills, but the most important has to do with occupational licenses for military spouses. When you move every 2 years a lot of times if you're active duty military, so your family comes with you. Well, if your spouse has an occupational license in another state, they have to apply for a new license here in Georgia. And sometimes that process can be very backlogged and it can take some time. This bill requires the state to get back to these folks within 30 days. After their application is processed, they're also able to apply while they're living in another state. And there's even a gap of time where they can work here in Georgia using their occupational license.
So the occupational license meaning like a real estate agent or a hairstylist,
right,
or a taxi cab driver. That's interesting. Okay, I didn't know that was a thing. All right, that's important.
Yes, absolutely. And I spoke with Representative Bethany Ballard, who sponsored the bill and who is also a military wife. And she said, this really makes a difference, especially when every dollar counts to these military families and everyone wants to contribute.
Interesting. Jonathan O'Brien, Capitol reporter for WSB Radio, joining us live on the Mark Arum Show. All right. Squatting, the military bill. Any other headlines coming from the new laws?
Yes, human trafficking.
Oh, wow. Okay.
There were several consequential bills having to do with human trafficking. One requires certain businesses like spas and hotels and convenience stores and a whole list of others to post the human trafficking hotline number in their business, in their place of business, so that if, folks are suspicious of anything, they can make that call. It also requires it allows surprise inspections by the massage board here in the state to inspect those massage parlors, which we know have become so infamous now with regards to human trafficking. Some of them,
there's nothing that will snap you into reality more than this. I had this experience. It wasn't in Atlanta. It was in Seattle. So I was out there for Easter, and my brother and I and his wife and Maya, we went out to brunch, Easter brunch at this nice hotel in downtown Seattle. And of course, I had to go to the bathroom, and I go to the bathroom, and I'm having the time of my life. My brother's there, I'm eating good food, enjoying Easter brunch, and then there's this sticker in the bathroom: if you're being human trafficked right now, you know, do this and we'll, and I was like, oh my, like, it's just snaps into reality how big a deal that human trafficking is.
Exactly, exactly. And First Lady Marti Kemp, who heads up the Grace Commission here in Georgia, you know, she's really picked up the mantle having to do with human trafficking here in Georgia. She's very passionate about it. And she spoke to reporters after the bill was signed. And there was another piece of legislation that vacates the sentences for folks who are convicted of crimes if that crime is tied to the human trafficking.
Oh, wow.
So if they're convicted of prostitution or something like that, that conviction would be overturned. And she said, you know, it's really about in ensuring that these folks can, you know, start their lives new.
I know that's an issue very important to the First Lady. All right, let's squeeze in one more new law here in Georgia. We need a sounder for a new law.
Right. Well, those were the big ones. There was another piece of legislation, you know, putting penalties in place for, you know, grooming of minors and things like that. It was all lumped together with human trafficking, but that was really the big, those were really the highlights.
Gotcha. All right, Jonathan O'Brien, Capitol reporter. Now you can. You're on summer vacation, right? No, nothing to cover under the Gold Dome.
Right. Well, you know, until they drag us back for bill signings. Oh. It's bill signing season. We have until May 7th, and then he has to either sign or veto. So we'll be watching it.
And then after May 7th, you're going to summer camp. What kind of are you going to?
Right. After May 7th, I'm going on vacation, Mark.
There you go, right. Jonathan O'Brien. Appreciate you as always, buddy.
All right. Thank you, Mark.
There you go. All right. So important legislation there signed by Governor Kemp today. The squatting law. That's big. That's really big for all the folks that have been, you know, caught up in that, have something squatting in their home. Gosh, I can't even imagine what that's going, what that was like. So hopefully this law will prevent that. I didn't know about that law. If for military families, if your spouse is, you're stationed in Texas, right? There's a ton of bases in Texas. You get transferred to Georgia. And your spouse isn't in the military, but they have some sort of a license that it can transfer over and they don't have to reapply. I wonder if that applies to lawyers. So let's say Longoria and his wife live in Texas on a base. Longoria's in the military. Leslie's a lawyer. And then Longoria gets transferred to Georgia. Does Leslie not have to take the bar in Georgia? Does that just automatically, is that part of it?
That would be cool.
Is Jonathan still on access for? Go ask the governor, Jonathan.
No, he's not there.
He's not there. All right, fair enough.
He's on vacation.
He's at summer camp, little guy. All right, congrats to Ted in Cleveland, winners of the Heart and Cheap Trick tickets, Mother's Day special, courtesy of the Mark Arum Show and 95.5 WSB. All right, when we come back, we'll update our top local stories and Longoria's Fact of the Day. And, ooh, Deborah's going to reveal the big guests we have tomorrow on the show. Stay with us. One segment to go of the Mark Arum Show.
People who need people.
Happy 82nd birthday, Babs. Barbra Streisand, born on this date in 1942, right in the heart of World War II. That has nothing to do with Barbra, but happy birthday, Barbra. Updating the big story today, President Biden signed the $95 billion foreign aid package, ending a six-month delay that left Ukraine fighting for its survival. CBS's Linda Kenyon, who was on the show yesterday, has the latest from the White House.
The president says it took a long time to pass the bill, but there will be no delay in sending the aid.
Literally, a few hours, we're going to begin sending in equipment to Ukraine for air defense munitions, for artillery, for rocket systems, and armored vehicles.
Biden says the emergency aid comes from America's existing stockpile, while it helps national security and boosts U.S. manufacturing.
In other words, we're helping Ukraine while at the same time investing in our own industrial base.
The bill also includes aid to Israel and humanitarian aid to Gaza. Linda Kenyon, CBS News, the White House.
And if you missed it earlier in the show, back in the 9 o'clock hour, we had reporter Joel Lindsley on from Kyiv, Ukraine, commenting on the aid package and reaction. It's safe to say Ukrainians are ecstatic that they're going to be getting $61 billion in military help from the United States of America. If you missed that interview, Longoria is going to post the podcast after the show. Wherever you get your podcast, or just go to markarum.com. But yeah, so that is in signed into law. $61 million to Ukraine, $26 billion to Israel, $8 billion to Taiwan, but also the TikTok ban in there. We had Stephen Dennis on, a congressional reporter from Bloomberg. The hard date for that ban. If you have TikTok on your phone right now, or you're a TikTok user, or you're a TikTok influencer, and it's part of your business, January 19th, that's the worst case scenario for you. That could be the first
January
day.
January 19th?
January 19th. Okay. So basically, there's 6 months. Again, I think it's a billion-dollar app. It can't just disappear. There's going to be some salvation. ByteDance, the owner of the company, is either going to spin it off or sell it to a U.S. company. No one's leaving billions of dollars on the table. So I understand all the TikTok fans out there are really upset. But I'm not an expert, but no one's leaving billions of dollars on the table. So I think there will be a solution. But if there's not, January 19th is when you're going to lose your ish and move to Scotland. Is that where the Loch Ness Monster is? Scotland?
Yeah, Scotland. Yes.
Yeah, all right. Have you ever been to Scotland? You've probably been to Scotland,
Deborah. I have not been to Scotland.
What?
We always go straight into England.
All right, well, maybe we'll go because there's an update on a new search for Nessie, the Loch Ness Monster. Yeah, Bree Tennis has more.
NASA says they'll join in with the latest search for the Loch Ness Monster. Last year, one of the biggest searches for Nessie captured loud underwater noises and several potential sightings, but nothing scientific. This latest search will take place on the 90th anniversary of the first photo of Nessie, which has been proven to be a fake. But there have been nearly 1,300 sightings of Nessie since that photo was released. The new search is May 30th to June 2nd. I'm Bree Tennis.
I've been a Nessie denialist my entire life. I remember Leonard Nimoy, his show, they did a thing on the Loch Ness Monster. And that famous picture, that famous picture of the Nessie head.
Yeah.
And the scientists are like, that's 12 inches. That is, you know, that's not a monster. It's a stick.
Right.
But the fact that NASA's like, yeah, we'll help you.
Yeah,
that actually lends a lot of credibility to it.
Wasted a lot of our money.
Well, probably. But the fact that NASA's like, yeah, we'll give you resources to that. Actually, I'm like, oh, maybe there is the Loch Ness Monster. Is Nessie related to alligators? Are they in the same genome?
They could be.
Yeah. If you're in Florida, officials are warning residents they might find alligators looking for love in all the wrong places.
Recently, alligator trapper Mike Dragich was caught on video removing an 8-foot long gator from a Jacksonville neighborhood with his bare hands. It's possible that gator was looking for love because this is courtship season for them. Many areas are warning residents to keep their eyes open, especially near water. The rule of thumb here, of course, is where there's water, there could be gators. Florida Fish and Wildlife officials say gator attacks are rare. There have been just over 450 documented since 1948. Peter King, CBS News, Orlando.
So it's gator mating season. And Ashley Frasca, host of Green and Growing, she says it's hatching season, too. So gators are mating and birds are hatching. So they're on opposite ends of the spectrum there. But if you have a pet gator, watch out. It could be Randy. Or you named it Randy. Randy's Randy.
Longoria's fact of the day.
Yeah, that's not my fact today. Today is National Pigs in a Blanket Day.
Ooh.
Yeah, the first written record of pigs in a blanket occurs in Betty Crocker's Cooking for Kids in 1957. Pigs in a blanket are also known as devils on horsebacks, kilted sausages, and wiener winks. In the United Kingdom, pigs in a blanket are small sausages wrapped up in bacon.
Oh, not the puff pastry that we're used to here.
So you could eat that because you're on your carb, no carb, whatever.
No, I can't eat. Well, the bacon ones I could.
Yeah.
Not the puff pastry ones. Like, I had chicken minis today from Chick-fil-A.
Yeah.
Alex Williams' wife brought some down, and I just ate the chicken out of it and gave Purnell the minis.
Yeah, he thought the minis were in there. He's like, where are the minis at? I was like, he told you.
Yeah,
like, oh, I didn't hear
it. I've said it before, and I'll say it again. You want to have a successful event, whether it's a work party, an engagement party, a wedding, a quinceañera. You want heavy appetizers, past appetizers.
Yeah.
No, and no one, even a vegan will sneak a pig in the blanket if they're done right. So good. I think they have big trays of them at Costco you can get.
Oh, really?
Like big frozen, like pre-made. You just got to heat them up. Oh, I wonder if they work in the air fryer.
I'm sure they do.
Oh, I bet they do.
There we go. Yeah. All right. Of course, I'm talking food because I'm starving now as we approach the noon hour, which though means when I get hungry, it's time for Stars of the Show.
Are you guys ready for the Mark Arum Star of the Show?
First off, reporter Joe Lindsley joined us live from Kiev, Ukraine. If you missed that interview, I urge you to check out the podcast at markarum.com and listen to that. We went in-depth on what it's like to live in a war-torn country. Our buddy Peter King Not only did the Randy Gator story, but he joined us live about the new airline fees rules. Stephen Dennis, Bloomberg reporter, congressional reporter, joined us live on the TikTok ban. Again, January 19th is the hard date when the app might disappear from your phones. Jonathan O'Brien, check out his Wikipedia page. He is the WSB Radio Capital reporter. He joined us about the new laws that Governor Kemp signed in today. Kimberly Page Williams brought me the chicken minis today from the Channel 2 Sweeps Breakfast. She gets a star of the show. Am I forgetting anybody?
I don't think so.
I forgot someone yesterday, and I forgot to make good
on
it.
Who did we forget yesterday?
I should write stuff down because I don't have much of a hippocampus memory anymore. I'm forgetting someone. If I forgot you, don't worry. I'll make good tomorrow. We didn't miss any guests, right? I got all the guests now.
No, I got all the guests.
All right, speaking of guests, who's with us tomorrow, Deborah?
Well, Scott Slade will join us,
yes!
Of course. And then I believe, if we have it all locked down properly, T.I. is bringing his young daughter in, who's also a rapper.
That's amazing. So for the first time in talk radio history, a show is going to feature Scott Slade and T.I. live on the program. Hannity's never done that. Von Hessler's never done that. Erickson, who's coming up, has never done that. So tomorrow on the show, Scott Slade and legendary rapper T.I. Good job, Deborah. And Pernell helping book the guests. All right, conversation continues on all of the social media outlets that I'm on. At Mark Arum, M-A-R-K-A-R-U-M. Stay safe. Have a great Wednesday, Atlanta. Not so long.
Guests of the Mark Arum Show stay at the All Suite Omni Hotel, located in the heart of Chicago's Magnificent Mile.